Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm going to hand you over to Steve as the editor, and Emma is your title is...
Deputy editor.
I'm more important than the editor most of the time, aren't I?
Yeah. And we're going to try and...
I'll hand you over to Steve and Emma.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Terry. We're going to try and record this for a podcast because we do lots of stuff on social media, as you can imagine these days, as well as the magazine, as we'll explain. But we're together with these two.
So if we suddenly can escape.
We can't go too far apart, so we both got.
I mean, this morning it was quite interesting because we were in a broom cupboard this morning.
We were in a broom cupboard.
The only place in Morton's that is sort of ideal for recording podcasts is a broom cupboard.
And then we had to turn the lights out because you could hear it on the microphone. So we're in a dark broom cupboard.
Dark broom cupboard.
Four of us. Well, Emma was the only lady there, so... Yeah. Well, welcome. Projector. Shuffle this way a bit. Get away from the projector. Welcome to Morton's Media, of which Kitchen Garden is just one magazine, although we would say certainly the best magazine.
Oh, well,
absolutely,
we are a bit biased.
By a long way. We are a bit biased. Got two talks for you this afternoon, two for the price of one. We're going to give you a quick talk on Kitchen Garden itself, because after all, who else could tell you about that? I'm sure you get lots of talks on growing onions and leeks and potatoes and that sort of thing. So we thought we'd give you a quick chat on Kitchen Garden, since we've been working here, which is virtually for some time now, isn't it?
For a few years.
Yeah, a few years. And then we'll have a break. And then we've got a talk as well that Emma's done on some more of the more unusual veg that we've grown and we think is worth growing, you know, very often in... Mm. Not our gardening magazine, but because some, you know, TV programmes and things like that, you get told about some unusual veg and you grow it and you think, I'm not sure why I bothered with that, I might as well have stuck to potatoes. I'm sure you'll have. We've grown a few that we thought are worthwhile and perhaps more interesting and you might like to try yourselves if you haven't already. Because after that, I'm not sure about sort of experience here, if you've all been growing veg for ages or just tried a few, you know, pop the tomatoes on the patio or whatever. I suspect there's a good cross-section here. So some of you, I'm sure, will be able to tell us a thing or two. So don't be frightened to say, rubbish, this is how I do it, because we're quite happy to learn ourselves. So without more ado, do we need to swap?
Are we probably. Okay?
Yeah. Oh, shuffle.
Oh, hang on.
Don't try and go anywhere.
No, I won't.
We should say before we start, just Lou's across the door, the hallway there, directly opposite, if anybody needs to do that. Yes, so Kitchen Garden, oh look, award winner, voted best gardening magazine of the year. I'm going to be saying that quite a lot right the way through because, yes, it happened. We did actually win it quite a few years ago, shortly after the magazine was first put together. By a guy called Andrew Blackford, who was the first editor, and actually set the magazine up himself and sort of kitchen table publishing, if you like. You know, he left his job, which was on practical gardening. Don't know if any of you can remember that far back to practical gardening. He was editor of that. That closed down, unfortunately, and he had a great idea for Kitchen Garden. But the publisher then at the time said, no, it would never work. You know, no one wants a magazine just on veg and fruit and veg. You're mad. So he left, set it up on his own, and it's, well, flown, really. It's been great ever since, and been copied ever since, I have to say, although not nearly as good. We are the best. So, yeah, kitchen garden. We beat the Gardener's World, we beat, didn't we? RHS,
yes, we beat Gardener's
Garden
World,
Magazine.
Yes,
yeah. Sorry. So, a little history. Yeah, it was first published in 1997. And I actually remember that when it first started. So I'm starting to feel my age now. But first published in 1997. I say Andrew Blackford was the first publisher. And he very kindly thought, oh, maybe Steve, because I'd been working with Emma on Garden News. You probably know Garden News as well, I would imagine, which at the time we were working there was a newspaper format. Used to sit on the shelves in the newsagents with all the newspapers. Since become a magazine. Quite a good one, he says. But yeah, well, we were there, it was even better, of course.
Oh, of course.
But yeah, so we worked together on Garden News. Andrew and someone else who I know, a million miles away, said, oh, maybe Steve would be a good editor. And then I said, oh, could Emma come and join as well? Because she does all the work, as we've already said, and has all the ideas. So I needed her propping me up. So we came and worked here. 2005-06, it doesn't seem be that long ago. That
14 years since I rang you up there.
I know. I don't look at the oldest ones that when we first started, because the pictures in there, I just look so young. I can't believe it. Look, compare them to now and I get frightened, so I never look at those. And we celebrated our 250th edition in July last year. So you might say, well, how can you keep thinking of new things to write about veg and fruit? And I must say, when we moved from Garden News, which talks about everything, all the ornamentals and everything, sort of thought, oh,
it's quite, what are we going to do? It is, you can. It's quite interesting. There's a lot of variations in growing and... And we do rely on a lot of contributors who've got a lot of other fresh ideas too.
So we don't write it all, but we do write quite a bit. Supermarkets and news agents, you'll find it wherever you go, in Tesco's and Sainsbury's and all those places. I should ask how many of you read it already. You will after today, won't you?
Yeah.
I know you will. In fact, you don't get out without signing a subscription form, so you definitely will. Britain's best-selling fruit and veg mag now, and magazine of the year. Did I mention that? Oh, and the team. Obviously, an awful lot of people put the magazine together. It's not just us
three.
And our colleague Tony.
Yes.
The three mudketeers, as we call ourselves these days. So it's not just us, obviously, there's a whole load of marketing people and advertising people and designers. We rely heavily on our excellent designer to put this together for us and make it look really nice and appealing on the supermarket shelves. But obviously, as editor and deputy editor, we'll be talking mostly about the editorial this afternoon. Oh, we have got a little sidekick. You might just be able to make out in the middle there is our gnome called Dorcas. He's our mascot.
Mm.
And if you have a look online, we did a Christmas ad, which I might be able to show you since we've got an expert here on working this thing. We might be able to show you the Christmas ad a little bit later on, which it's got something like 28,000 views, I think, last time we looked.
Yeah.
So it did really well. And Tony starred in that one.
Tony was the real star.
Yeah. So editorial team, there's three of us. We also, as Emma says, we've got a load of other contributors as well, some better known than others. But the thing they've all got in common is they're all very good fruit and veg growers. They all know their stuff. Oh, apart from this lady down the bottom, who is our resident chef, who makes some wonderful recipes, and she's also a great food photographer as well. So we sit here sort of just before lunchtime reading her copy and looking through her pictures, her recipe pictures, absolutely starving, don't we?
Yes, but it's not good reading those pages before lunch.
It's not, no. But other than that, we've got a great... I mean, this is only half of them. Don't all write for us every month necessarily, sort of mix and match. They all specialise in different things, but they all are very keen growers. So some other magazines you might get people who know a little bit and dabble, but these guys really do know their stuff. We've got Rob Smith there, who won the Big Allotment Challenge recently. a couple of years ago now, I guess. We've got Sue Stickland, who was ex-head gardener at Wrighton Gardens. So she certainly knows her stuff. It's people like that. Pippa Greenwood, Bob Flowerdew writes for us now and again. Martin Fish, who's hosts the BBC Radio Leeds gardening programme, has done for years. And he's also an advisor at RHS Harlow Carr. So you can see the sort of people who write for us. But we do a little bit of work ourselves as well.
We do a bit.
Yeah, we do contribute. That's when we first, that's the sort of oldest issue and the newest. This was when we were celebrating our 250th issue. Sorry, I'm standing in front of you, aren't I? So how do we do it? Well, as I say, most of the freelance writers obviously have to know what they're doing and when they've got to do it. So we plan them 12 months ahead, which can be quite a job, really, because there's a lot of them. Mm. And we've got to be careful, obviously, that we don't repeat ourselves either, you know, in an issue or in a year or even over a couple of years. And bearing in mind, we are, you know, restricted to fruit and veg. You know, we've got to be thinking of new topics all the time for them to write about. Thankfully, they're also very good themselves at coming up with new topics and things and places to visit and all that sort of thing. But we go out and visit places ourselves, don't we?
We do, in the summer.
Go and look around gardens. Someone's got to do it, I suppose. Mm. Go around in the sunshine, photographing lovely gardens and talking to head gardeners and comparing notes about the veg and things
it's
like
a
that.
Horrible day job.
It's a horrible job. It really is. Yeah. We've had a few mishaps and things along the way with sat navs and taking us down muddy lanes and not being able to find places.
Exactly.
And, mostly it's great. Emma and I mostly, and Tony as well, we have monthly planning meetings. So as well as sort of planning in for 12 months ahead what all these talented writers are going to write about, makes it sound like we're not talented really, doesn't it? So we also plan 3 months ahead to fill in the gaps, if you like, and do things which are more perhaps more seasonal, like the jobs pages, that sort of thing. And we've also got spreads, which you'll see, called Mudketeers again, which is just what we're doing in the garden every month. So we'll plan those in and sort of fill in the gaps so that we've got a full issue every year. So it's just sort of 2 pages, really, of what we're doing in the garden, just to prove that we're gardeners as well. And we're out there. We've all got our own veg patches and greenhouses and polytunnels and things like that. So we put what we're doing in there as well, and we'll plan that 3 months ahead. And then once the latest issue's gone to press, I'll use all our planning to put together a flat plan, which you won't be able to see, I'm sure, but it's basically just a representation of the magazine on a flat bit of paper that everybody follows for the month. So advertising know what pages they've got to sell, what space they've got, we know what space we've got. And very often there's a bit of a battle between us. You know, they'll want a few more pages, so we'll have to give up a bit of space or vice versa. But it is just a plan of what's going in the month. And you'll also see some little dots and things. We'll talk about that in a minute. That's our sort of social media. So we do lots of videoing as well. We've got a YouTube channel. Don't know how many of you are up on YouTube, or how many of you go on the social media for some of your gardening information. More and more people these days. So we're very aware of that, and we're on all, you know, sort of on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and YouTube. So we're
it's a very important marketing tool, isn't it?
Isn't
it's
it?
The way of getting the name out there, which is the main thing with it, really.
Yeah. So we do our best to link the two, don't we?
And the good thing about it as well is we can respond very quickly to the environment, because at the minute, for example, this Wednesday we're going to be doing some filming for the April issue, which is very difficult in January. But last week I thought we were going to have an inch of snow on the ground for filming But at least with social media, we can respond very quickly to events, weather events, and put information on there for readers.
So that's it. And lots of people talking about Brexit and, you know, will it be food shortages, that sort of thing.
Well, it's actually quite difficult to respond to that in the magazine, because we're working too far in advance.
It moves too quickly, doesn't it? By the time the magazine comes out, it's old news or it's wrong.
Yeah.
But social media. So we also sort of program in videos that we've done before, so that we can say to you, if you're reading the magazine, you want to know a bit more about sowing carrots, for example. We've got carrots in this, in the latest one. If we've already done a video on carrots, we can say, oh, visit YouTube, type in this address and you'll find out more about sowing your carrots. Or we'll look through and make new videos on things that, that we haven't done before that are in the magazine. So, as I say, just a plan of day-to-day work in the magazine, making sure there's no blank pages, because you certainly can't have a blank page in the middle of your magazine.
Oh, will you take questions as you talk?
Yeah, if you'd like.
Is it the same number of pages?
No, it varies a bit. Through the spring and the summer, tends to be bigger, 116 pages usually goes up in eights in publishing, because they do it in units of eight, and Terry will stamp on me when I get something wrong in a minute, because it's far better than me, very nervous. So it normally goes up in eights. So, spring and summer, it'll be bigger.
Yeah.
Through the winter, perhaps a little bit smaller. But we do. Yeah, I should have said, any questions, just shout out, it's fine. Although we'll have some questions at the end if you've got any gardening questions you want as well.
You mentioned social media.
Yeah.
Do you have someone that, I don't know how obviously the whole idea is for you to make money, Morton. How do you go about getting someone to advertise on social media? Do you have a special person for that? Or don't you advertise on social media?
It's a tricky one, that.
We're trying to encourage it, aren't we? And the advertising teams are now kind of more geared up for that. And they're trying to, but it's interesting because a lot of our sort of people that advertise with us, they're still not really into that kind of, they haven't quite got caught on to the social media aspect either. So sometimes we're trying to do packages now where we're selling an advert, but we'll say, well, we can look at the product and maybe do a video of it and put it on YouTube for you to try and encourage advertisers so they can widen their net, if you like. But a lot of the advertisers are still not quite, well, our advertisers are not quite.
Gardening's been quite slow on the uptake.
Very slow, yeah.
Really. Yes.
I mean, this morning we did a podcast which was actually sponsored by a company. I mean, obviously we said that on it, and we actually have used them. It's the product.
Wouldn't do it if we hadn't used it.
That was quite good. So that's the first time we've ever done anything, a little club, you know. So it's starting to venture out that way now. Yeah.
Mm.
It's more a service, isn't it, that we can give people, not just the printed version, but we can then, you know, give them something more, really.
That's right, yeah. And as you say, it can be immediate. So if one of us is at home and happens to be doing some just small job, you know, it might be trimming your tomatoes or something, then we can, you know, we can just do a video ourselves, even at home, and have it on YouTube very quickly.
Yeah,
so that's always another thing. So back plans. So then it's a simple case of putting it all together, really. So I've tried to make it look and sound as complicated as I possibly can, so that they think they're paying me for something at least, or paying us for something at least. But the writers just send in their copy and the pictures. Don't always send in what we want, so we go through it and make sure that there's enough pictures, the pictures are good enough, the copy's good enough. People who know are much far better at, I'm a gardener, and there are people here who know far better about grammar and spelling and all those things, who go through it as well and make sure that that's all okay. We might have to go back to writers and say, sorry, you know, we need more pictures, or we need a picture of a certain variety. It's pictures of veg, varieties are really difficult to come by unless you've actually grown it yourself and taken the pictures. Photo libraries and things that, of course, all publishers use. We'll have a picture of, you know, potatoes, obviously. Potatoes being dug up even, or, you know, various jobs being done on potatoes, but they may not have King Edwards or whatever you happen to want at the time.
We have a good relationship with seed companies, though, because quite often they'll send a picture in to us if we want one, but then we give them a little credit along the side.
Yeah, so that's very handy for us. We put it all in-house style, because obviously Morton's, in general, through most of their magazines have got a certain house style, like all publishers have, so it all has to go into a style. For example, with us, you know, we'll mention imperial and metric measurements and things like that. It's all very dull when you talk about it, but it's important to the readers when they're reading through, you know, that it's as easy to read and as interesting to read as possible, obviously, otherwise they'll go elsewhere. So, you know, we make sure that we've put the copy into little boxes and things, so if you don't want to read the whole lot, you can just read a summary. You know, nice captions, but informative captions, so that you, if you just want to look at the pictures, you can, and still get a little bit of information out of it. So we go through and do all those bits as a team ourselves, and say there's also sub-editors who aren't looking so much for gardening content. They'll come back to us with questions of, you know, sort of the technical gardening bits. Is that right or is that right? You know, should you prune it at that time of year, like the writer said? But they'll also be checking it for grammar and spelling and all those things. We write about a third of it ourselves. So we are really out there gardening, whenever we can, weather permitting. So we've got an allotment, which is, Tony's patch, really, just down the road, which we use quite a bit for filming. So Emma's got her own garden as well, with veg, and me likewise, and a little bit of fruit as well. So we'll write about those things. We'll also, you know, other things like Mother's Day and features, you know, to sort of Christmas, that sort of thing. We'll slot those sorts of features in as well. So testing products, we do quite a lot of. I think we're testing non-plastic pots on Wednesday.
We are.
Or looking at, we've already got a trial running, but we're looking at those. So lots of people trying to
get away from plastic. So yeah, coir pots and
bamboo and rice, I think. Sounds quite tasty,
yeah.
Really. But yeah, we've got pots made of bamboo and rice we're trying, which you'd never know. But it's, yeah. So all sorts of things. Those are the sort of things we'll do ourselves. Test products and that sort of thing. Got some very talented designers here. They really are very good, and ours is particularly good, I think. And she makes some lovely designs out of what we give her, which is basically just a bunch of words and some pictures, and a few instructions sometimes. But she does a lovely job of putting together some really nice features for us, which are, again, pleasant on the eye and people want to read. We read the whole lot, a good three times. Probably four sometimes, just to check for any errors or anything. Nothing worse than reading a magazine and finding spelling mistakes and things. Can't say they're never there. Yes, sir.
It's just a comment from the smart arse at the back.
Oh.
You haven't quite read it three times.
Oh, was it in the presentation? Oh, yeah.
Unless, of course, a desjuner.
Desjuner.
Technical term for people who do the layouts.
Yes. Oh, sorry. Yes. More haste, less speed.
Yeah.
There's always one, isn't there?
Yeah, isn't there one? Yeah. But that was deliberate. You see,
no,
you put that
bag
in at that point. No goodie
bag.
We've got
a spare goodie bag now. Yes, very well spotted. So yes, deliberate mistake. So we read the magazine. Don't necessarily read our presentations three times before they go out. And as we've mentioned, big on social media. We've had a website for ages, but we've just launched a new one, which is for subscribers. So if you subscribe, you get when you get your magazine through the door, it has a unique subscriber code on it, and you put that in to the website, and you get into this website here. So you get extra things like money off products and extra features which you won't have found in the magazine,
competitions.
Giving away a very nice food dehydrator, I think, at the moment, which is nearly 400 quid's worth. Things like that. So encourage you, you know, once you've bought your subscription, to stay with us, really, and give you that bit extra. So it takes quite a bit of feeding, really, these two websites. They are, anything on social media, they're sort of hungry beasts,
monsters,
really,
aren't they?
Yeah.
You've got to keep feeding them, otherwise they scream at you.
And people
screams at you.
Oh, yeah.
You do that as well as the magazine?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, it's terrible.
Our colleague's very good at it, actually, isn't he?
Yes.
I mean, he's great. Yes. He's just been away on holiday, but he's like sort of posts a load of stuff before he goes on holiday, all time to go on. So
yes.
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah.
That was great.
Oh, yeah. I thought he was away. This is something new. Because I'm sure lots of you use social media. When you go back onto a website or Facebook or whatever it is, you expect to see something new all the time, don't you? 24/7, really. There's got to be something new on there. Otherwise people get bored with you and switch you off again. You know, they liked you one day, they'll unlike you the next. So,
exactly.
Yeah, it's got to constantly feeding them, really. But at the same time, it's a really, as Emma was saying earlier, a really useful way of getting up-to-date information on there. Because it's really, you know, I said we planned 3 months ahead. Well, we're very nearly, well, we publish a good couple of months, don't we, ahead.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can be standing in a garden in the snow sowing your runner beans, and it's silly really, but at least with websites, immediate. And
there have been many times we've had to be sort of do little tricks to try and make it look like it's a certain time of year, haven't we?
Yeah,
or if you've
yeah.
got the camera panning around, say, no, that tree hasn't got any leaves on it, you can't do that, don't go over that, don't go there, there's flowers, you can't go there, we're supposed to be filming, you know, October. Don't
That's
do that.
It, yeah.
So that gets quite tricky, doesn't it?
The filming
July. I remember once, but it wasn't on this title, it was on Garden News. And it was a certain time of year, and we wanted some... Oh, it was a picture. We wanted a picture of grapes, didn't we?
Oh.
We had a vine on our old allotment.
Oh, yeah.
So we wanted a picture of some grapes hanging on it. We ended up going to Sainsbury's, didn't we? And we bought a tied them on. We don't do that. We don't do it very often.
No.
These are the truths. This is what happens.
I'm going to get out there alive, Emma. You do find you sort of, stripping off your woolly hat and your...
Oh, yeah, that's the thing.
You're supposed to be filming July and January,
and
you're trying to make it look as if you're really warm. And
so you've got all your woolly clothes on, you take everything off.
Darren knows a bit about this because he does the filming, so, yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit, yeah.
Well, he can be standing there in a great big, woolly hat with ears and everything, and we're freezing trying to make it look like it's summer. So, strange day's work sometimes. Also on Facebook, of course. Who isn't? Have to be on Facebook these days. We mentioned YouTube and some of these others as well. Do have a look on YouTube. Not afraid of making a fool of ourselves. Emma usually comes up with the ideas. There's lots of dad dancing and dressing up in silly Christmas hats and things. So it's partly that, to be honest, to pull people on because they love nothing more than someone looking silly. But we also do sort of instructional videos and that sort of thing as well. I think Emma's talking about sowing early salads in the polytunnel there. And we do lots of recipes.
Yeah, we do. Cooking, yeah. The idea is it's like you're on your allotment, you've got your little stove and you just go and pick something and put it in the pan. That was the idea, wasn't it? Sometimes works.
Usually, yeah.
Although sometimes it's you're standing there waiting for it to take it. Go and take it inside, Tony, and put it on the stove.
We've only got a one-ring little gas burner, haven't we?
Yeah.
And trying to make soup on that. It takes a while. Yeah. But the recipe's been quite successful,
they
I
have,
think.
Yeah.
It's our lunch as
very
well.
Tasty. Yeah, yeah,
very
good.
Tasty. Very tasty. So, lots of those too. And obviously recipes, very... What we're trying to do there as well is reach a bigger audience. So, of course, a lot of gardeners grow their own fruit and veg, want to know how, once you've grown it, what do you do with it? Need to know what to do with it in the kitchen. But also it brings in, obviously, people who may not ever garden, but they're interested in cooking. So we hopefully pull in a bigger audience. Yes?
Do you do any articles or anything geared for children to bring children?
We do, yes.
Yeah, we've just started a column, actually, called Grow with... Gnome Grown. We've got a picture of Dorcas, our little gnome. And, every month we put something in, ideas for children, to get children into growing. I think this latest one we've got, a very simple one. It's eggs, with growing cress in them, with, a little body with a toilet roll holder, and they're quite cute. But all sorts of little things, and I rope in my great nieces and nephews to do the pictures, and that can be a bit of a nightmare, trying to get the pictures and pulling faces, and never work with children and animals, they say,
don't they? And yet you keep doing it.
Yeah, I keep doing it, but it is quite fun, but it is good to try and encourage youngsters, because I think if you get youngsters interested when they're very young, they often go off it when they get a little bit older, but they do remember it, and I think that brings them back into it when they're a lot older.
And occasionally we do product tests on kiddies' tools and that sort of thing.
Features on schools' gardening, sometimes we do features on schools.
Yeah, due to go and do one of those in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's really good how gardening is coming back onto the curriculum in a lot of cases. And there's a lot of school gardens out there, actually, out there with their raised beds. And so we get involved in that. Jumping ahead of myself, really. So Instagram, I don't know if any of you use that. That's very popular with us. I've got quite a lot of followers on that one. And Facebook, it's another way for readers to get in touch with us as well. So we monitor it quite carefully and... very often we don't get letters anymore. We get messages on Facebook these days. We'll look there to see if, you know, readers have got a problem with anything, or if there's anything they want, or they're requesting a certain feature or whatever. They'll very often do it through Facebook these days. Virtually no letters at all now.
No.
Very few people putting pen to paper. And that is our quick guide of what we do, which doesn't make it sound... I should have made it a bit more complicated, shouldn't I?
How do you get those in there? Do you pay for them, or do you get them as a...
Oh, that'd be nice if we got them free. No, unfortunately. We work with lots of seed companies, and we have worked with lots of seed companies in the past for cover mounts, we call them, or gifts, free gifts to you. No, we have to pay for them, unfortunately. So it's someone other than I does the sums and works out how much we can afford to put on there to promote the magazine, obviously, because we've got competitors who are doing exactly the same thing. So, yeah, I mean, you'll never buy Kitchen Garden in the... Well, certainly not for the last... as long as I can remember, buy Kitchen Garden in the shops without getting a gift of some sort. Yeah, so it's very often seeds. You might get gloves and all sorts of gardening
and
goodies.
You do find that, obviously, we sell through supermarkets, and they're actually quite demanding. They actually want us to put gifts on because they want to give something to their customers that the other supermarkets are not giving. So actually, they're quite demanding of what they want. So
yeah.
We have to kind of obviously fulfil what they want, because that's an important place where we sell our magazines. It's incredibly important now, especially with a lot of news agents going and. So, you know, that's quite key as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And we spend an awful lot of time on the front cover as well. You may not believe it, but it's the most important page, obviously, in the magazine as far as we're concerned, because if it's, you know, I think they reckon you've got about 5 seconds tops
for
someone to grab somebody's attention. And then you hope that they'll read one or two lines and that'll pull them in.
Some people are drawn in by the picture, some people are drawn in by the words. It depends on the person.
It's literally 5 seconds. If they walk past and you haven't grabbed their attention straight away, if they're not a regular buyer, you've lost them then.
Yeah.
So, yeah, spend a lot of time on that.
In terms of veganism, there's a lot of very rampant vegans out there, and they're getting more and more militant. Are you picking up on that?
Very much so.
More interest and maybe articles especially for vegans.
We had a debate last month about that, and we were saying we would quite like to put... which we did used to actually have a writer that wrote on a vegan way, didn't she? I mean, recipes as well as growing in a vegan way.
Yeah, that was going back through 4 years.
That was going back through 4 years. But it is quite tricky, because it's one of those things that you can really upset people very easily.
Mm.
And it's finding the right person to write it is going to be... Because I wouldn't dare touch it with... I wouldn't touch it with a barge pole, personally. But if we could find the right person, I think it would be good. But it's quite scary.
It's a bit like the pesticides or not, you know, or organics.
Yeah, organics, that's always been a big issue.
Yeah, or peat or not. Very easy to upset
the
people.
The question really was more positive, saying, well, do you not benefit a lot from...
Oh yes,
I think we do.
We are mentioning it more, I think, generally in the magazine to try, and I think we've even put it on the front cover at some point. Something to try and encourage to say, "Oh look, you're vegan, great. Have Kitchen Garden, grow your own." You know, so yeah, it's definitely. I think it'll definitely help us. I think certainly in the future. Yeah.
Yeah. On the other hand, to keep the balance, our cookery writer is vegetarian, and we have to remind her every now and again to mention, put some meat in,
just toss in a bit of meat.
Otherwise, the meat eaters will complain.
Yes,
that's
it. Special carnivore section.
That's it. Yeah. Yes. If we catered for everybody, we'd have so many sections. We'd need 1,000 pages, wouldn't we? I think. Yeah. Well, we can. Unless you've got any more questions on that particular.
Just one thing. Right.
Yes.
Can we go back to the egg, the crisp, and the toilet roll?
Oh, right.
Explain it to me.
Oh, basically, all it is...
I'm four.
Okay, well, basically, you just get an egg.
Yeah.
I think I tried one hardboard and one not hardboard. I think it doesn't matter, really, but I just make a little hole in the top, take all the contents out, you've got a hollow egg, then you draw a face on it,
right.
and then you've got the toilet roll. And actually, I covered the toilet roll in a bit of white paper because it's not very nice to draw on. And then I got my great niece to just draw on it. I drew a basic body, a lady and a man, two, and then she coloured it in. Yeah. And then you stick the egg on top, and then you just put a little bit of cotton wool in, wet it, and then sprinkle cress seeds on. Right. And after a couple of days, you've got hair coming out of the egg, you see. I mean, it's really simple, but for sort of four-year-olds, three-year-olds.
Can we do it to Terry?
Yeah, we could sprinkle a bit of cress on. Yeah, and keep your head damp for a couple of days, and it'll grow well. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any more questions on putting the magazine together? Or?
Excuse me, has it always been a glossy cover?
Yes, as far as I can remember. Yeah,
I think it's got glossier.
It has got glossier.
I'm sure there are
various degrees of glossiness.
Yes.
Yes, and it is extra glossy at the moment, again, to catch people's attention.
Yeah.
But the glossier, the more expensive, so it's another sum that you have to do, I think.
Did that. It's just to make it stand out a little bit more than the other one, maybe.
Yeah, sometimes if it's a special edition, we'll get permission to spend a bit more and perhaps put a metallic colour or something like that on the front, just something that catches the light even more. But that's sort of rare. It's only 200.
And what is the print run?
It varies a lot because it's obviously gardening's very seasonal.
Right.
But probably something like 35,000 average. So say it is nationwide and in lots of stores. So yeah. I'd say it varies from obviously this time of year, fewer people worrying about their gardens, but come the spring, the print run will jump. Well, we've got a choice now. We can either carry on with the next talk, or if you would like a break and a cup of tea, we can do that now.
Coffee? Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, do that. Drink?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll make our way to the corner.
So,
normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A bit unusual here. What is this unusual tuba? Anybody know? Hang on, Steve's going to get... Oh, that down there, Steve, just under that. Yeah. It actually is... ochre. It's a tuba from South America. In the Andes, it's known as uca. And it's the family of oxalis, which has got this lovely, what's oxalis, it's got three leaves on the plant, and also called New Zealand yam. And the tubers come, and Steve's passing on the yellow one, but they come in some lovely colours. You get apricot, pink, red, orange. And they're out in South America, they're almost as important as potatoes. And in fact, they're sort of used like potatoes. And the good thing about these is they have less diseases, less pests than potatoes. And what do they taste like? Well, they're a little bit, it's kind of similar to potato. Got a hint of lemon,
yeah,
I'd say.
Lemony.
Yeah, and they're great roasted and adding to stews and soups and that sort of thing. I mean, I actually haven't grown them. Steve, you grew lots last year, didn't you? You grew a range of different coloured.
Now, one of those veg, once you plant them, you never get rid of them. You can never find each tiny little tuber in the ground.
Yeah.
Like artichokes, but they're really nice.
They'll go in the ground. You start them off early, don't you, in pots?
Start them off in pots. In fact, I just left some in pots. To grow on, they're quite pretty little plant, really. Yeah. They've got this sort of oxalis like leaf and quite a nice yellow flower. So quite pretty, really.
How big do they grow? How much room do they take up?
Depends on the variety. Some I grew, like the one which just passed round, was quite compact.
Yeah.
So no more than a foot, I would say. There were one or two other varieties which were more like 3 feet, but still quite compact. So probably smaller than a potato plant. Don't get blight, of course, because they're completely unrelated to...
But you have to kind of leave them in the ground as long as you can, don't you? And at least up until the first frost, and then harvest them, because they need quite a long growing season to actually get any tubers on them. There's a few companies that are doing them now, aren't there? Real Seeds, I mean, I've got some details of where you can buy these things I'm showing you. A company called Real Seeds is actually good, www.realseeds.co.uk, I think. They do a whole range of the different colours, so you can go and pick an orange one or whatever. But you say once you've got them, you can then, unlike potatoes, which you obviously got to start again with fresh stock, you can actually keep a few and then grow them again.
Do you cook them the same way as potatoes?
Yeah, you can do, yeah, roast them, yeah. Yeah, mainly, I mean, I had them roasted the other day when you, Tony gave me some, but have you eaten them? You mainly roasted them?
Yeah, mostly roasted or boiled. Yeah,
boiled them,
like potatoes.
Yeah.
You can, if you're really interested, there's the Ochre Breeders Association as well, which you join for a couple of pounds, and they're experimenting at the moment and finding all the varieties they can. And if you join, so I think it's only a few pounds, you can just log onto their website and join. They'll send you a few tubers of lots of varieties, which is lovely, really, because as I said, you get orange ones and red ones and yellow ones. It's really quite fascinating when you get them. And they ask you to feed back on the varieties that you've planted with a view to try and find the best ones for cultivation. With the thought that with global warming and everything else and with blight being such a problem, it might be a good alternative crop, which they can keep developing and develop the flavour and get it better and better.
See what you mean by long planting, May to October. It is a long time.
But they're really very productive, and what you do is eat the biggest ones, which never get very big, probably about 4 or 5 inches long.
Smaller than that, mostly.
But then you eat those, but then you save the little ones, much like we've handed round here, and replant them the next year. That's the idea. You just put one or two in a 5-inch pot, get them growing, and then either pop them up into a slightly bigger pot. So you wouldn't need anything too big. 18-inch pot would probably be too big, so something a bit smaller, 14 perhaps, and just grow them on, and then tip them out at the end of the year once they've had a frost.
What's their ideal soil type then? It's obviously around here fairly light, but they actually grow very well.
Yeah, it'd be perfect, I would think.
Well, Tony grew them, didn't he, outside in rows. He had quite a lot of success.
Yes, he's only just down the road.
Yeah, he's just down the road.
I grow in heavy clay and they just keep popping up. So it sits wet and horrible frozen for into March quite often. And I think they've grown, but they haven't.
It's quite similar to potato. You leave one in there.
I know.
Got the next year's comes right in between your carrots.
That's it, And then try and weed it out without taking half your carrots out as well.
How much would you get from a 14-inch pot then? How many, what sort of portion would that give
well,
you?
Well, as long as you keep watering them well, it's pretty good. I mean, about weight-wise, but they'll fill the pot, much like a potato would if you...
How many would you put in a 14-inch pot?
Well, I started mine off in smaller ones than that, so I was in sort of like a 5-inch pot, and I was just putting one good-sized tuber in there or a couple of smaller ones. So they don't need very much at all, and they will fill the pot. They're really productive things.
Do they lose their colour if you're boiling them?
If you boil them, they tend to, yeah. Especially the very bright ones, the very bright reds and oranges.
So roast them, really?
Yeah, yeah, roast them to give the colour.
So the one on the right is garlic, but what's the one on the left? Any takers? Elephant garlic, yes, absolutely. Same family as garlic, allium, but it's actually more related to a leek. So it's got very mild garlic flavour, very big cloves, again ideal for roasting. Plant the same as garlic, which is sort of October, November time is the best time to plant. And this is the result, a nice big elephant garlic.
They're amazing, aren't they?
Yeah.
Sometimes get little little side shoots on the corms on the side, don't you, which you can split off and grow as well.
Yeah, that's quite a nice one.
Yeah, it's mild flavour.
Yeah. Oh, Tom Tarto and a Tombagine. Well, these were new a couple of years ago,
yeah,
and I've actually started looking these up, and it looks like the companies are not doing them anymore. So it's obviously a bit of a quirky thing, and they just thought, oh, you know, we'll see how it goes. But it's basically a tomato. The one on the left there is a tomato grafted onto a potato, and you bought the plant, and literally in the late summer, you lifted the plant, and there you got potato, crop of potatoes underneath, and then this one on the right here is a aubergine that's grafted onto a tomato plant, which of course you can do because they're all the same family,
so you can
do it. We had them, we trialled them, and they weren't particularly brilliant. I mean, well, I think I got three potatoes. I mean, I didn't get potatoes like that at the bottom of mine. I think I got two or three if I was lucky.
Yeah.
I think Tony grew this one. He got a couple of aubergines and some tomatoes.
Yeah.
So it was just a bit of a quirky thing. But I mean, they are doing... There's a lot now. You can get a lot of grafted tomato plants now from garden centres and from nurseries and seed companies. And they're very good. They're very expensive, though.
Yeah, £12-14.
Yeah, you're certainly about £4.99 a plant. But they do produce a lot of fruit and
earlier
fruit,
yeah.
Stronger plants. And so if you find growing tomatoes tricky, it's worth trying one or two of those just to help you out a bit because they really are very good.
Sometimes I have a grafted tomato plant and grow my own as well. You get the grafted one early, and then the ones that you've sown yourself come out a little bit later, so it stretches the season a bit.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, what's this crop? Scrambling plant. Its root tubers are eaten. Popular veg found in most supermarkets.
Sweet potato.
It is a sweet potato. And you normally get them from seed companies as slips, which are basically they're sort of sprouted from the tubers and then they actually rooted and they take them off and then send them out as slips like this, usually in sort of late spring, isn't it, April, May time. You pot them up, grow them on somewhere warm to start with. You can put them outside, but to be honest, they don't do that well in this country. They're now trying to develop a sweet potato that's much hardier in our climate. And they're coming up with some varieties all the time. There's a couple of varieties that that are a lot better now. If you can grow them in a greenhouse, that's even better. Or if you grow them outside but put a cloche over them or a little mini greenhouse over them, just keep them warm and keep them well watered, you can be lucky and get, at the end of the season, a crop like this. So you tend to find you don't get the really big ones like you get in the supermarkets. They tend to be a lot smaller. But you can get a crop off them. And it's a fun thing to do.
They sprawl, really sprawling,
same family as Morning Glory flower, so you get a nice little flowers like Morning Glory on, but what's this miniature watermelon look alike? Size of a grape, actually, that. It is a cucumber family, yeah, and it actually tastes like cucumber. It's a cucamelon.
That's right.
Said to be developed by James Wong. He's the Kew-trained botanist and TV presenter you might have seen. So he sort of works with some of the seed companies, and he mentioned this, and they decided to develop it and see if it was any good for commercial use. Produces this masses and masses of vines. It's a bit like a cucumber, but it goes mad. It's absolutely enormous. Tiny little yellow flowers. They're all right. They taste quite nice. They're a bit cucumber with a bit of a sweet. But I wouldn't sort of, you know, if you want a cucumber, grow a cucumber, really, I think, in a way. But, you know, again, it's a bit quirky. I mean, some people have pickled them, don't they, and that sort of thing. So and you get such a lot of fruit that actually you probably do make quite nice pickles, probably.
Best if you pick them young before the skins get too tough.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of cut them in half and just throw them into a salad. Or
yeah. You're supposed to be able to chop it down at the end of the season and grow it again, but I never had any success with that, I must admit.
It doesn't sound like you like them enough to...
No. Well, this is a serpent squash, and this is what I grew a couple of years ago. This was my plant in my garden. It must have been nearly 4 foot long. But it's barking mad, this plant. It's obviously a member. It's a member of... It's a gourd. It's actually a gourd. It's related to the squashes. It's related to the marrows and the courgettes. It's a gourd, but it's an edible gourd. I had masses of them. I must have had about... Well, at one go, I had about... six or seven. I mean, what, you just can't eat them all. I mean, it's just too big. I think you harvest it and you chop the end off and that's all you need. So what do you do with the rest of it? But it's a fun thing to grow. And it just sprawls and it goes mad. So if you've got children or something in the family, it's a great one for them to play with. And I think somebody said they've made didgeridoos out of them, or sort of dried them, and sort of, it's just a bit of an odd thing to do. But the other thing that's nice about them is they have a lovely flower. It's a white flower, and unlike the normal yellow flowers of a lot of the squash family. And in fact, there's another one very closely related to this, which has beautiful frilly edges to the white flower. I think it's a snake gourd, and that's even prettier. And it's worth just growing it for the flowers, really. Ah, golden version of what? Beetroot. Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's. I mean, you can get white. Golden red beetroot. I mean, the good thing about this one is obviously it doesn't bleed like the red one. Tend to be a bit sweeter. If you're not really a lover of beetroot, it's worth trying this one. I mean, I don't like beetroot, but I have tried this one. I quite liked it. Varieties include Burpees Golden, Boldore. So that's always worth trying. Have you ever grown the
Boldore's?
Boldore's a new one. Yeah.
And you can even eat that one raw.
Yeah.
If you pick it to a golf ball size.
Better in salads probably than the other, really. What's this fruit? Anybody know what that is? No, it's actually a mulberry. It's from a mulberry tree. And you get black, red and white mulberry trees. The fruit's the same colour, but they just call them black, red and white. The white ones are not known for their fruit quality. They were the ones that were used for feeding silkworms and the silk moths. A lot of put silk moths. You see, we've not checked this three times, have we? Before anybody mentions. So the black mulberry is best for fruit production, but the problem with mulberry trees is they're enormous, 10 metres high and wide, they're absolutely enormous. And so they're too big for most gardens, to be honest. But they're related to fig trees. Sharp, tangy taste, probably best cooked. But interesting fact, King James I encouraged mulberry planting in London, hopefully to create a silk industry, but unfortunately they planted black mulberries and not the white mulberry. So, no, the silkworms didn't like them. Don't
they?
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah. Because they sometimes take quite a long time to fruit, don't they?
They're supposed to take 20, 25 years, but mine's only 4 or 5 years old. I'm getting just a few mulberries from it. You have to beat the blackbirds to them. But
yeah.
Yeah.
But if you've only got a small garden, you can get a small one. It's called Charlotte Russe. Only grows to about 1.5 metres high. You could grow it in a pot. It won the RHS Chelsea Flower Show Plant of the Year in 2017. Self-pollinating. It fruits on new and old wood. And you often get fruit maybe in a year or two after you've bought the plant. It's fairly new on the market, and there's quite a lot of people have. It hasn't really been tested, road tested for a long time yet, and there's been a few comments. I mean, I haven't grown this one, but there's been a few comments that the fruit's not that tasty. And some people are saying it's more related to the white mulberry rather than the black one, so that's not quite so good, really. But somebody also said that he's found mulberries actually improve with age, so after several years, actually the flavour improves. So maybe this one will if you keep it for any length of time. But it's an interesting idea if you want a mulberry and you haven't got room for a large one.
Oh, beautiful trees, though.
Yeah.
Lovely bark.
Yeah. What's this little tuber? Give you a clue. First word is also a big cat. Second word follows hazel, Brazil, and pea.
Tiger nut.
Tiger nut. Absolutely. Yeah, it's the tiger nut. Although it's not a nut, it's a tuber. Tuberous root of the chufa sedge. That's quite hard to say. They've been eaten for centuries by many cultures, and in Spain they make a milky drink out of it called horchata. They were better known apparently in the 40s and 50s. Apparently they were eaten a bit more like sweets, that they were a bit
good
more common then.
Hmm? Good for fishing.
And good for fishing. There they are, good for fishing. Yeah.
Just managed to get hold of some.
Yeah.
Because I've read about the Spanish drink. It's supposed to be extremely beneficial.
Yes. Yes, very, very nutritional.
And I was so excited because I remember them from childhood.
Yeah. I thought they were quite nice actually, because the only thing with them, and I'd like to put at the bottom, the downside is cleaning them, because you get a mass of these little tubers, but they're quite rough, and you're trying to clean off the soil. But I actually thought they were quite sweet. I thought they were quite unusual. I wasn't expecting them to taste like that.
Soak them a bit first, don't you?
Maybe soak them. Yeah. Yeah.
But, a bit chewy if you don't.
Yeah, but again, it's a bit of a quirky thing, really. As I say, they are a bit of a pain to clean, so you do get a lot on a root, though.
You do, yeah.
Yeah. Ah, a couple of unusual things here. On the left, we've got tree spinach, and on the right, there's only a few leaves of it showing, Dubenton's variegated kale. The tree spinach is an annual. It's a hardy annual. You can just sprinkle it, the seeds, anywhere, and it'll just pop up. And actually, if you let it grow very tall and let it flower, it will actually self-seed everywhere. But it is actually very pretty, and you actually pick the young leaves and use them like spinach. And it's actually a really pretty flower, really pretty plant to have in the garden, and being edible as well, it's a bonus. So it's always worth trying some of those, actually. Chilton Seeds sell them. So that's definitely recommend that. The Dubenton's variegated kale is a perennial kale. It's a short-lived perennial, but I've had a clump of this in my garden for about 4 years, and it just keeps sort of spreading outwards. And it's a very mild flavoured kale. It just goes all year round, all winter. I mean, mine get covered in caterpillars in the summer, but it just fights on through. And in the winter, you've got some nice young fresh. Leaves that are not covered in caterpillars, and it's variegated. You've got this lovely little white edging to it, it's so easy to take from cuttings. You just literally pull off a little piece and stick it in a pot and it grows. It's a wonderful, wonderful kale to have in the garden, I think, especially if you struggle with growing brassicas. Grow this one, it just keeps on going. So that's a Dubenton's variegated kale. You can get one that isn't variegated, or you can get this one, which is quite pretty. I mean, quite nice in a flower border, to be honest. Pennard plants sell that one. It's pretty rare, that one. You don't see it very often, but it's a company called Pennard Plants sells it. Oh, yeah. Steve has a lovely big crop of what? Some more tubers here. This is a member of the daisy family. Again, it comes from South America. And in the Inca language, it means water root, and it's also called Peruvian ground apple.
I'd be amazed if you get this one.
Yeah. Very close. It's actually yacon. produces this massive leafy plant. It's
really
huge.
Massive.
Yeah. And the tubers, we both grew it, I think it was the same year, wasn't it? And was it, I was expecting, I got it in a pot actually, about this sort of size. And I got to the end of the season, tipped it out. I could not believe it. The tubers were like this. I mean, they're massive.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. And then I thought, well, how am I going to eat this? And so I just basically chopped it up, and I think I just boiled it, actually, I think, initially. But it has a texture like water chestnut. It's kind of a crunchy, slight sweetness.
What's the leaf taste like?
Well, again, it's like everything. Any green leaf, they say, you can eat the leaves. And we always say, it always tastes like spinach. Everything always tastes like, it's like other things, it always tastes like chicken. It's like anything in gardening, it's anything in vegetable growing, it all tastes like spinach. I must admit, I didn't taste the leaves, but apparently that's what it's like. And you can wrap things in the leaves, so they're big enough to sort of wrap other food in, sort of, you know, a bit like dewy vine leaves, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
It probably would make quite nice crisps.
I grew mine in ground and regretted it because it took two of us to dig the tubers up. They were massive and they went so deep. I mean, it's a shame it doesn't taste a bit better because you could feed the world with these
things. I know, you could. Yeah, it's
food crisis,
yeah,
over.
Food crisis, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It says massive tubers on these.
Yeah.
But if you grow dahlias, you'd grow it in a very similar way to dahlias, really.
Yeah, it's not hardy or winter.
Hardy,
you've got to lift the tubers and then replant them. Yeah.
Yeah. Just save a few overwintering boxes of compost or something, greenhouse, replant them next spring.
I think that's
certainly productive.
Yeah, I think that's the end of the slides on that one. So yeah, so over to you with any questions. Anybody got any questions?
Gardening?
Have a go at standard gardening.
Oh, go on, yeah. Well, give us a go. We'll try.
There's been a problem this year, Steve, with garlic. One of the members has had problems with his garlic not really kind of growing very fast. Is that a general thing this year, or do you think because of the weather conditions and what have you?
It was very, very hot and dry, wasn't it, last year? I can't remember how many watering cans are carried up and down the garden trying to keep them.
Do you mean the ones that have been planted sort of November time?
Yeah,
those ones. Yeah, I mean, I think it can be a lot to do with the conditions, I think. Often you find with garlic, it will just sit there for quite a while.
Mm.
It doesn't do anything. And then all of a sudden, you get to sort of spring and it will suddenly go.
Yeah.
And that is a critical moment. And that's when a lot of people make mistakes, because quite often we'll get dry springs and garlic needs a lot of water at that growing stage. And I think that could be quite a lot of the time when people only get very small garlic. And I think it's because it's not getting water at the critical time. Once it gets further on in the season, it's not quite so critical, but it is certainly during the spring.
You feed as well.
And feed, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Feed, yeah.
So when things just sit in the ground, is it better not to put them out, to wait until the conditions?
Well, I mean, garlic is, because you grow garlic in little cell trays, don't you? You start off because your ground's so heavy. I think if you've got really heavy soil, sometimes they'll just sit there and it won't do them any good. If you've got nice light soil, it's fine to plant them out, I think, to be honest, and they're probably better off getting them. The less a plant has of root disturbance in a way, the more it's going to get away in the spring. But if you've got really heavy clay, or you're not finding garlic's working for you, then it's worth trying to start it off in little cell trays first and then plant it out in the spring.
I even grow some in pots just permanently, really. Instead of planting malt and garlic outside, I'll plant a few in pots and keep them in a polytunnel over the winter, and then plant the main crop in the spring. As I said, my soil is just so heavy. The light soil should be perfect, but then you've got to keep the feeding up, haven't you? Otherwise, the nutrients tend to get washed through, so that could be a problem then, rather than the drainage. But certainly on mine, you know, it's drainage. They've just sit there and rot and sunk. Pots are much better. And then, but in the spring, planting in the spring with the right varieties, absolutely fine.
I grow a rocket all the time. It's fabulous over winter, just outside, no problem. But come the summer, I can hardly eat it at all because it gets these little white dots all over it and tiny holes. I don't know what it is that gets at it, but I can't seem to avoid it through the summer. Is there anything that you can do? Anything I can use to stop that, or what it is?
That would be the dreaded flea beetle.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, only attacks it, you know.
It's only in the summer, yeah.
If you get those sticky yellow traps for a whitefly that you hang in the greenhouse, you'll see those in the garden centres. If you go over the top of your rows with that, don't actually touch the plants, but just go over the top.
Yeah.
You'll probably find that these things will jump and they'll get stuck on the sticky trap.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do that. Old gardener I used to know, long gone now, unfortunately, but he'd always swear by when the seedlings are quite young, so the plants are quite small, just dry off some soil, ordinary soil, and powder it up and sprinkle that over the top of your seedlings. So you're dusting them with just ordinary dry soil. And that keeps them off as well. Of course, there are sprays you can use, but it depends.
I prefer not to use the sprays.
And the other thing is the usual EnviroMesh, covering
Enviro
a crop
mesh,
protection cover, really.
Yeah.
You put it on as soon as you've sown them, really.
Really?
Yeah, because they attack very quickly when they're small, and that's, they're very vulnerable then.
I struggle to go rock it through the summer anyway, because it just bolts.
And it's very hot, if it's hot.
Quite,
yeah.
Try and grow it for as much of the year as I can.
Yeah.
It's not the flavour. Marmite herb isn't the other lucky we don't, I think.
What is a good value for money polytunnel, would you say? No doubt you've tried and tested all the polytunnels on the market.
Well, if money was no object,
I'd get a gardener.
I'd get a Keeda. I love those. I think they've got a very good design. And they're the ones that come with, it almost looks like giant bubble plastic. You want to go around and pop it. It's actually very thick, twin-walled plastic. And you can grow for almost all year round with very little heat at all in those. They've also got, if money really is no object, they've got all sorts of fancy vents. You can wind up the sides and drop them again so you get ventilation in the summer. Very, very nice.
Northern polytunnels is one that we know we've dealt with, worked with. First tunnels. Very good.
I've got one. When you think of Robinsons, you normally think greenhouses, don't you? But there is a completely separate company called Robinsons that sell polytunnels. And I've got one of those, which has got Dutch-style, slightly sloping sides and high eaves, so that if you grow tomatoes, you've got that much more space for your cool tomatoes, so you can get an extra couple of trusses off of them. That's very good.
When you're talking about tunnels and greenhouses, how often would you say change all the soil? I mean, people say you used to dig it all out and put new soil in. I mean, is it possible to get away without doing that?
I think so, for quite a long time, anyway.
And how would you sterilise soil?
It's really difficult.
Yeah, I know.
You've almost got to replace it, I think.
If you want to
be able to get certain soils sterilised. And I worked on commercial nurseries, which used methyl bromide and things, which is so lethal that you'd never hated using them then, certainly wouldn't use them now.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a case of being careful, really. And if you really have got problems, the options are either dig it out and replace it, or go over to pots, grow bags, raised beds. Raised beds are fine.
Yeah.
And crop rotation, even in the polytunnel, I mean, it's very difficult, but I grow tomatoes and peppers, so I tend to sort of just swap them around as best you can. Very difficult,
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
On behalf of the group, then, may I thank you, Steve, and you, Elaine.
Emma,
giving us an interesting afternoon's talk. And
right,
it's the first time we've ever done this, so
thank you, Terry.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.